FM News Talk 97.1 podcast.
If I have to say I'm sitting on a stage, I mean, I understand what you're getting at. If I have to say I'm sitting on a stage with Chairman Kim, and that's going to get us to save 30 million lives, could be more than that. I'm willing to sit on the stage. I'm willing to travel to Singapore very proudly, very gladly.
Wow. Yeah, you tell him, President Trump. How about that? He sat down. That was part of the interview that I think he may have taped with Sean Hannity before he left Singapore, right? Because he arrived back here earlier, late last night, early today kind of thing. And still laying it out there. You know, the left is not quite sure what to think. I don't watch Morning Joe, but I saw that.
You don't?
They never think correctly, but they sometimes don't know what to think about Donald Trump. I never watch Morning Joe, but I did see where he and his wife were, believe it or not, praising the president for what he did.
They were?
They were. Hold on. Wait for it.
Can't believe it.
You got to hear it. You got to hear this. Hold on. If you didn't hear it. We get to it. Hold on. Cut 28 for me, please. Go to cut 28.
So just looking through the prism, what impact will this have on American voters? What's the outcome? They're going to look at the front page of the paper today, and they're going to say, good on him. This is a hell of a lot better.
I agree.
Than a nuclear, a hell of a lot better than a nuclear war. And who knows, maybe shaking things up. Maybe saying no to the experts, maybe raising hell on the world stage, maybe calling him Little Rocket Man, maybe threatening him, got these two together.
Did Mika say, I agree? Is that what I heard?
Agree. I'm pretty sure that's what I heard. I know. Gosh. Isn't it weird?
You know what? Good for them. Good for them for coming to a realization.
Well, the funny thing about it is if those two can come to a realization on MSNBC, first of all, their jobs might be in peril. But second of all, as crazy and whacked out as those two have become recently, like Trump haters, like anti-Trumpers to the nth degree, imagine what the average American liberal is thinking sitting at home. Now, not the snowflakes, not the ones who still cower in the corner and you know, scream obscenities at the president every time they see him on TV. But you have to think, people are sitting at home thinking, well, you know, we could be lobbing bombs at North Korea, but instead.
Yeah.
So maybe, and I hate to put too much hope in this, maybe, just maybe, they're starting to realize that while he takes a different tact on issues, he's effective. And you find people go and read books about the 7 habits of highly effective people. Is that what the name of the book is? And if you've ever read that book, you realize that it's not easy to adopt those things into your life every day and to follow them all the time. You have to be diligent. You have to be committed to it. You have to follow. It's not easy to do that, but there's a reason that successful people are successful. They don't dumb into it. I don't believe in you know, accidental success. I don't think that happens. So you look back at what Donald Trump has done in his life, and while when he was running for office, they pointed out the failures he's had along the way, what they didn't want you to focus on was all the successes he's had along the way. And everybody who's really successful will tell you, long before I was successful, I failed 100 times. But you learn certain skill sets along the way. You know, Donald Trump may not hit the ball out of the park every time like he did with North Korea. And we don't know for sure how that's going to end. But ultimately, his approach is different. But it's also one that he's tried successfully many times before. And the left just... they just can't wrap their mushy brains around that. They just can't do it.
No, but don't Morning Joe did in some context.
Speaking of mushy,
I always hope that some of them are just like, at the end of the day, you want success.
Yes,
even if you don't necessarily agree how we got there, that we can all kind of come together hoping for success.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of mushy brains, Can we talk about Kim Gardner for a minute? See what she did?
Oh, gosh.
See the, have you had the headline this morning already?
With the drug, the drug charges? Yeah, she's going to dismiss low-level marijuana charges.
So her here's a sitting circuit attorney whose office is down, I think, she, by some reports, by five or six attorneys short of what she needs for a full staff, can't handle the caseload that they've got now, yet spend hundreds of thousands of dollars trying to chase down a zero evidence case against former Governor Greitens. And now she's announced, shock to the world, that she's instructed her prosecutors to look at every case involving, is it one, is it 100 ounces?
100, yeah.
100 grams of marijuana.
Oh, oh my goodness.
Every case involving 100 grams of marijuana or less, charges would be dismissed unless there are other circumstances involved.
Holy
and
moly.
Jeff Rorta, who I've had on the show many times over the years, had the best response to this. He said, Ms. Gardner, somebody carrying 100 grams of marijuana is not a casual marijuana user. That's called a drug dealer.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right?
That so, is called
so
a drug
for those,
dealer.
So, yeah. So, yeah. So for those of us.
Why that number? You know, like, where did that come from?
Accurate.
Well, it's funny because if one of the reporters on Channel 4 this morning is doing a live shot, and she goes, we couldn't come up, we couldn't get police to give us an exact replica of what that would look like, but here's a bag, a cereal bag with, it had like, Tony the Tiger, what is that cereal?
Oh, Frosted Flakes.
It had Frosted Flakes in it, right? And they had Frosted Flakes in a cereal bag, and they set it on a scale to come up with 100 grams of what 100 grams of Frosted Flakes would look like, just to give you an idea of how much dope this would be or how much pot this would be, right? It's pretty funny. It wasn't a dime
small.
Bag or whatever the hell they used to call those little things that you would buy, right? I didn't even know those exist anymore.
Dime bag.
I'm dating myself. So Kim Gardner campaigned, supported by George Soros, on revising the criminal code. Do you understand that? She campaigned on the fact that she was going to change, reform criminal justice in this country. And I told you all along, this is all about either reducing the penalties or not prosecuting people for crimes you disagree with. And lo and behold, here comes Megan Green, a city alderwoman, progressive, crazy leftist, who said that in an interview on Channel 4. You can watch it for yourselves. Well, you know, police don't enforce these laws fairly. It's a law. You're caught with more than so many grams of marijuana, you're going to jail. That law may change eventually, but right now it hasn't changed. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how Kim Gardner can just suddenly decide that she's going to ignore the law if the legislation hasn't changed. We'll talk about it. We'll get your phone numbers. I know a lot of people are passionate about this and they want marijuana legalized. The bottom line is right now it isn't. And my argument is the prosecutor in the city can't just randomly decide that she's not going to prosecute crimes that violate the ordinance or the law. She can't do it any more than she could declare St. Louis a sanctuary state and decide not to cooperate with ICE. 314-241-9797. We got a lot going on this morning. They issued a temporary injunction against the city of Deerfield, Illinois, late yesterday to prevent them from enforcing their so-called assault weapons ban. We're going to talk about that. We've got somebody from the Illinois State Rifle Association who's going to join us at the top of the hour.
Coming on pretty soon, dude. How much do you smoke?
This will be a little demonstration of that. Listen up. That was my skull. I'm so wasted.
That is Kim Gardner supporter Jeff Spicoli. Calling in this morning, so happy that the pigs will not be, killing his buzz.
Killing his high, bro.
Just because he's got 100 grams of marijuana, dude. Get off my back.
I don't know why that it always reminds me of Dazed and Confused too. That's like one of my favorite movies, and that's what it reminds me of.
People get so mad when I play that Spicoli bite. You shouldn't label everybody who smokes marijuana like Jeff Spicoli. I understand that. I know that there are professionals for some warped reason who still smoke that stuff. That's fine. You failed to grow up. That's fine. But the bottom line is what Kim Gardner's doing here is ridiculous. The Police Officers Association is opposed to it. I loved what Jeff Rorta said about that. 100 grams of marijuana is not a personal use amount. There's a name for somebody with 100 grams of marijuana, and that's a drug dealer. He also went on to say her job is to prosecute felons, and she has decided not to do her job. So the chief will likely direct officers to charge them at the municipal court level. And guess who else is about to get on board with all of this? Mayor Crewson, who hasn't accomplished a great deal so far other than pacifying protesters in the wake of the Stockley verdict last year. She is not in favor of low-level, nonviolent drug offenders being trapped in the criminal justice system. So in other words, she wants to ignore the laws that are on the books or not hold people criminally responsible for crimes, for laws she disagrees with. Who does that sound like to you? Barack Obama? Who picked and chose which laws he wanted to follow or not follow as president? There's a problem with the left in this country. And it's the other reason why the successes we've seen at the court level with Donald Trump being able to load is the wrong word. He's been, because they've slowed down the process, but he's been able to appoint a number of jurists who believe that they're there to interpret the law and not write new law. The way liberals get around the legislative approach to governance is that they install liberals at the court level where they can legislate from the bench. That's not their job at all. And there's the editorial in the Post today from the editorial board, mind you, they're all upset that Jason Stockley wants another day in court. Uh-oh. Right? Because here's the quandary they see. They know that the city won't settle with him. You know why? Because Mayor Crewson doesn't agree with him, and she's afraid she'll hack off the protesters again. So unlike dealing and settling with heroin dealers, they know the city won't be quick to settle this case, and their biggest fear is that it will make it into a courtroom somewhere, and lo and behold, it'll cause more riots. So again, we're more worried about the snowflakes than we are the people truly affected by something. It's ridiculous. Apparently, I have a problem because I've been infatuated with finding out how much is 100 grams of marijuana. In case you're just joining us, I'm that guy. So in case you're just joining us, Kim Gardner, the prosecutor for the city, has announced that she wants to reduce, like not prosecute, and also going forward, not prosecute, but also drop charges against anybody in her system, the current criminal justice system, who the police have arrested and charged with less than 100 grams of marijuana. All of those cases are going to be dismissed unless there are extenuating circumstances. Like, you know, like for example, if Anthony Lamar Smith also had a bag of heroin along with the marijuana he was dealing. That would be an extenuating circumstance, I assume, although maybe heroin is next. But Kim Gardner wants to reduce the criminal penalty for people with that amount of pot. So I wondered to myself, well, gee, how much pot is that? So we were having a rambunctious discussion here in the studio during the break there. And here's what I determined. 100 grams of marijuana, which is a dried out leafy substance, is about a quarter of a pound. right? And by estimates I've been able to find, that would equate to anywhere between, depending on how big you rolled them, 300 and 400 joints. Mm-hmm. 300 to 400.
That's a lot, right?
300 to 400 joints. Just like Jeff Rorta said of the Police Officers Association, that's not a casual user, that's a dealer.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's the equivalent of 20 packs of cigarettes. Mm-hmm. And my guess is, even if you're a daily user of marijuana, you're not smoking as much marijuana as you would smoke as a tobacco user would use. That's a safe assumption, isn't it?
Yes, I think that that's
probably, I mean, I'm
right.
Talking about things that I don't do, so I'm speculating here, but 20 packs of marijuana cigarettes would last you a lot longer than 20 packs of cigarettes would. Mm-hmm. If somebody smokes two packs a day, they're a pretty heavy cigarette smoker.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So let's assume it's only a pack a day. That's still 20 cigarettes a day. That's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think too, whenever you put those two things side by side, smoking a cigarette is an instant gratification, whereas I would think that smoking something like a joint would be, you'd have that effect a little bit longer. That effect holds a little bit longer.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So maybe that people probably wouldn't smoke as many.
So, dude, you're so stoned. It lasts for at least an hour
Jody
before you
Baloney.
Get another one. Plus, it gives you time to get down to the convenience store and get some snacks, mm-hmm. some munchies, right, in between. I'm
we
just
are
saying.
The wrong people I'm to be talking just saying. About.
Eric, welcome into the program.
Oh,
what's
gosh.
On your mind?
How you doing this morning?
I'm doing all right. Having a good time. How about you?
You know, work is work, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
It's funny, but these Democrats just keep coming up with ways to seem to acquire more votes by doing favors for people. Do you notice that?
Sure.
That's all they can do. They can't improve anything. They can't make anything better. So they just keep buying votes with all these changes and favors.
And usually they're buying votes with your money.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. If I quit paying taxes tomorrow, I would, but the government doesn't like that.
No, it's kind of hard to for them to spend your money if you're not paying it. So they need to keep raising the taxes to get more of it.
I give them more than enough, trust me.
Exactly, so, yeah.
I'm going to go out there with 99 grams of marijuana and drive around St. Louis.
Well, now, you know, I heard a noise earlier outside the studio and I couldn't figure out what it was. It was the loud cheering sound coming from North St. Louis where all the pot dealers are. Like,
oh,
wow,
yeah.
We can just like carry it outside of our, we can like carry it in our hands now. We don't have to hide it anymore.
Well, like you said, what's next? We're gonna eliminate the enforcement on cocaine and crack and heroin? Why not?
Yeah, that seems to be where Kim Gardner's going with it. It gives you a lot of confidence in your top law enforcement authority in the city, doesn't it?
It's shameful. It's very shameful. Marcus, great to hear you in the morning, man.
Eric, I appreciate the call, my friend. Thank you very much. Let me get to Scott here on line two. Scott, good morning.
Hey, good morning. You know, assuming the analogy you used is accurate about the size and whatever, I think that does go to show that it goes towards the dealer. If you're a cigarette smoker, does the average cigarette smoker carry 20 or 25 packs of cigarettes on them?
Absolutely not. I don't think so.
Right.
A pack or two, depending on how much you smoke a day, that's what you'd carry around with you, I'm assuming.
Right. And yeah. So to say that the 100 grams would be somebody using it occasionally, you know, unless they're homeless and they carry it with them wherever they go, you know, it looks like it's directed towards getting the dealers off. But does that surprise you from Kim Gardner?
No, it doesn't. We saw this coming a long time ago. It's what she campaigned on.
Yeah.
I was warning about this when she was running for office. And yep. Lacey Clay had his arm wrapped around her shoulder, and everybody was heralding her as the next great thing. And I'm like, wait a minute. She's supported by George Soros and the political action group he put together for the very purpose of what they call criminal justice reform. That's yep. like an immigration activist calling for comprehensive immigration reform. It's a code word for amnesty. That's what it is.
Yeah. She's an embarrassment. They ought to impeach her over the Greitens issue.
Well, they should, but unfortunately her voters reside in the city of St. Louis, and that's highly unlikely, right?
Yeah. Peace. Have a great day.
Yep, Scott, thank you for the phone call. I appreciate that. Yeah, that's just the it is what it is. It's a vacuum. The city of St. Louis is it's like a democratic, progressive, democratic vacuum, and no other noises can be heard within that vacuum except the ones from the hard left. And every election, the board of aldermen in the city tacks more to the left. And this Megan Green, who's pushing this, you know, this reduction in penalties or dropping crime, and she wants all marijuana to be legal and all of this stuff, it's all part of the same group. If you stood up and spoke out against this at a Board of Aldermen meeting, you'd get screamed out of the chamber.
You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show.
Right now, though, let me welcome in Richard Pearson. He is with the Illinois State Rifle Association and kind enough to give us a few minutes this morning. Richard, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Great to have you back on the program. I think you and I talked a couple of months ago, right after the village of Deerfield, or the city of Deerfield, decided it was going to institute a ban on what they refer to as assault weapons.
That I believe that's true. The Kingdom of Deerfield, I think.
Oh, is it? Okay. The Kingdom is... I like it. Yeah, so that's what they've decided. Fortunately, immediately your organization and a couple of others took them to court over this, and you had some success yesterday. Tell us what happened.
Well, to reiterate, in case anybody doesn't know, if you didn't turn in their definition of an assault weapon, which included 30-round magazines and anything that was semi-auto, basically, except the 22, you were subject to a $1,000 day fine, having the police break into your house and take your firearms. So we filed suit against them, and yesterday the court said the Illinois State Rifle Association and the Second Amendment Foundation are right. You cannot do this, and a temporary restraining order was issued.
Wow. So you know, I guess ultimately, I know things are a little different in Illinois than they are in Missouri here. You have to have a firearm owner's ID card. Does the state track what weapons you own if you purchase one with a FOID card?
No, they only know that you purchased one.
So based on that information, could the police in Deerfield come to your house and say, hey, we see that you purchased a Ruger Mini 14 a couple of years ago. Is it still in your possession? Do you believe it would have gotten to that point in Deerfield?
Well, no, because we have a state law against releasing that information to the unless it's a total criminal investigation, and this is not really a criminal investigation. This is an ordinance violation.
Sure. So in other words, unless somebody ratted on you, they'd have no way of knowing if you had one of these guns or not.
Correct. Unless they, you know, did all kinds of groundwork and looked at two gun stores and that sort of thing, which some police departments would like to do that in Illinois, namely the Chicago Police Department.
But again, I mean, my point there is kind of moot, because the bigger point here is that this could come to confiscation, and had this injunction not been granted, and I hope that you're successful in your challenge of this, but had this not been granted, law-abiding citizens who follow the law, who have a firearms owner ID card, who go through background checks and buy their guns legally, would have suddenly become criminals effective today in the Kingdom of Deerfield Park.
That is correct.
We should all be frightened by that.
Well, see, all gun owners everywhere need to be aware of this. They're trying this every place in the country that they can find. This was initiative with the Bloomberg group and George Soros' group. They are promoting this everywhere. They paid for all this. They paid for all their legal fees. They did all them. So this is an attack everywhere in the United States. So if you're in Illinois, that's one thing. But it's coming to Missouri, Kentucky, wherever your listeners are.
We're talking to Richard Pearson from the Illinois State Rifle Association. Richard, tell me what the court argument is against this ordinance. Tell me what you're arguing in court as to why this is not valid.
Well, when we passed concealed carry in July of 2013, you had 10 days to change your ordinance, or you couldn't ever change it again. So the 2013 concealed carry law said you cannot pass an assault weapons ban. If you have one grandfathered in, it can stay, which there are two of those in the state. Some other groups tried to do that, but after the 10-day period, this one was done within the 10-day period, but then they stripped out the ordinance and put new language in it and said it was an amendment, which wasn't true. The court didn't buy that. No one bought it except themselves, I guess. Said, no, you can't do that. So you're a violation of state law.
So the judge has issued a temporary injunction blocking the fines or any seizures until this gets decided in a courtroom somewhere.
It blocks the entire ordinance. You can't enforce this ordinance until the court decides one way or the other.
Well, nothing like them waiting till the last minute to make that decision, huh?
Well, the way it works around Illinois and most other courts, you know.
That's the truth. Richard, I appreciate your time. I'll direct people to ISRA.org or at ISRA on Twitter if you want to follow the progress of this case as it moves ahead. Hey, Richard, keep up the good work.
All right. Thank you very much for your time.
You bet, sir. Thank you for giving us some time this morning. Again, Richard Pearson from the Illinois State Rifle Association. Wow. You're a law-abiding citizen one day. The next day, you got a quarter pound of pot in your pocket. I'm just kidding. I'm conflating
what's
the two
going
issues.
On?
Can you tell I'm kind of focused on that this morning? I'm just kidding. They got yesterday it was announced they got enough votes to put on the ballot in California a proposal that would split the state into three different states. I'm assuming the state of confusion would be the one that included LA and San Francisco. Mm-hmm. I'm just guessing there. That's speculation on my part. Then there would be Northern California and Southern California, where I guess the Beach Boys would live in Southern California. So I don't know if it's got a chance. I don't know what the polls are saying, but it would apparently be the first time since like Virginia and West Virginia split all those years ago in the 1800s that a state had actually voted to split itself up.
That would be so weird.
It'd be difficult. That'd be really difficult, especially if you're a resident in California your whole entire life, and then all of a sudden you have to make a switch to say, I'm going to go visit my friend at the other state of California.
Well, it would be probably good for Republicans.
Yes.
Because my guess is Northern California minus San Francisco and L.A., if you take that chunk out of it, that turns into a red state, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the L.A., San Francisco group, they want to keep the good real estate there along the coast. That's going to be where the crazy libs are. In fact, it would be like escape from L.A. We could just fence all that off and keep the loonies out there, right? We'd know where they were. I don't know anything about what the southern part of the state would be. My concern here is that it would make Barack Obama into some sort of a prophet, because didn't he say one time that he had visited all 57 states? Because if this happens, there will then be 50. There'll be at least 52, right?
Yeah.
So we're getting closer to his ultimate dream of 57 USA. Throw in Puerto Rico and Washington, D.C., right? And you're at 54. I mean, we're getting closer. Barry's making a comeback. I'm just telling you. Hey, you know what? We haven't talked about this much, but go ahead and play cut number 27 for me, please, Katie.
I've been there. I've been to the bottom of bottom, and right now I'm on the highest of high. We are the party of President Donald J. Trump.
So that is Katie Arrington, whose name you're going to hear a lot more about. She ran toward the fire, not away from it. She ran toward Donald Trump in her primary challenge of Mark Sanford, the former governor in South Carolina, I believe, is a congressman down there now. He just got primaried by a pro-Trump candidate. He's out. Go to cut number 26, please.
It may have cost me an election in this case, but I stand by every one of those decisions to disagree with the president because I didn't think it, at the end of the day, was either concurrent with the promises I made when I first ran for office or the voices of the very people, the first district that I represent.
That was Mark Sanford.
The Trump doctrine is we're America, bitch.
So you weren't paying attention, Mark Sanford, right? This is the reason that these weak-kneed Republicans all over the country are backing off. So they need to back away. That's for sure. Hey, I'm going to get to your phone calls coming up. I promise. We're going to talk to Jennifer Kashinka when we come back here. We need to talk more about what's going on with Claire McCaskill. They're calling it Air Claire. Did you hear
it
that?
It really is time for the people of America to take up pitchforks.
So she went on an RV tour of Missouri because, you know, really, she's just like you and I, except that she owns $1 million aircraft that some sleuth reporter tracked it and found out that it happened to fly the exact same path as the RV. Because Claire Bear flew Air Claire, and she didn't ride in the RV all over the state of Missouri because that would be a little lowbrow.
The breaking news, within the past hour, a federal judge here in Washington ruled in favor of AT&T's merger with Time Warner, the parent company of CNN. The Justice Department had tried to block the $85 billion deal. After a six-week trial, the judge decided the merger can move forward.
All right, that was some of the big business news yesterday. Apparently, with no strings attached, the AT&T Time Warner merger is moving forward. I have no idea what that means for me. I have AT&T UVerse. Hopefully, maybe I'll get more channels than ever for less money. That seems unlikely. Rasa Kay is joining us this morning, and we appreciate having you on, Rasa, with Your Money Now. How are you?
Hey, good, thanks. You know, you may not be sure what this AT&T merger is going to be doing for you, but it could be awesome news for anybody working for Express Scripts or holding Express Scripts stock.
Why is that?
Well, because this paves the way for more of these mega mergers. So it bodes very, very well for Cigna's pending $67 billion purchase of that pharmacy benefit management company. Shares of Express Scripts rose almost 5% in after-hours trading on the news to $83 a share. And even Cigna shares were up just under 1% to $180. So one of the mega mergers in the offing to watch. Chinese telecom company ZTE's market value plunged by 40%, $3 billion, that's billion with a B, in early trading. That's because the Senate has decided it's going to vote this week on a bipartisan measure that reinstitutes penalties against ZTE for violating U.S. sanctions against exporting to Iran and North Korea and bans U.S. government agencies from purchasing any of the company's devices or services. We will get a look at consumer prices in May today as Wall Street awaits the conclusion of the Federal Reserve's two-day meeting. Another interest hike is expected, but investors are going to be looking for hints about whether the committee sees another one or two hikes for the rest of the year. Futures are pointed toward a higher market open today. Oil prices dropped this morning on rising U.S. supplies and expectations that OPEC could relax their voluntary output cuts, but the International Energy Agency is warning a massive oil gap is looming nonetheless. They see the collapse of Venezuela's oil industry coupled with the loss of Iranian oil after the U.S. reimposes sanctions as putting a big squeeze on global supplies and driving up gasoline prices next year. Chicago's looking for ways to pay for more beds at domestic violence shelters, so Mayor Rahm Emanuel is floating the idea of a 2% surcharge on home share rentals through sites like Airbnb. He thinks that could generate about $1.3 million for the program. Charitable giving surpassed the $400 billion mark for the first time in the U.S. That's according to a study from Giving USA. It credits the generosity to that booming stock market and strong economy. But they say it's not households that are digging deep. The data shows that giving has been declining. The researchers are calling it mega gifts that are coming through, endowments, and those are increasing. And here's my PSA for you for the day, Mark. At the start of the NBA Championship Series, Taco Bell promised free tacos if a team steals a game while on the road. Well, the Golden State Warriors did that week before last. So you can line up for your free lunchtime taco at participating Taco Bell locations today.
Really? But they did that twice, didn't they?
Well, apparently today's your day to cash in.
Okay, just one. So you get one taco or two? Because Golden State swept it, didn't they?
Well, yeah, but it was just a, it was like per game on the road.
Oh, okay. So. All right. So today's your day, and you go there, and you can take advantage of that. And then, of course, nobody can eat just one, and that's what they're hoping for.
Well, there's always a devious plan involved.
I'm sure there is. All right. Rasa, thanks so much.
Thank you, Mark.
Yep. Take care of yourself. Appreciate that. Hey, you know, I have to tell you, we were talking the other day about IHOB.
Yes.
And, of course, it was all it was just a marketing ploy, as we suspected.
Did it work for you? You
I did
went.
Not. I did oh, not. Okay. But my son and his friend went there yesterday. I think yesterday.
To get burgers?
Well.
Or pancakes?
I don't know why they wanted to go there. His friend wanted to go, so he mm-hmm. went there with her. And I said, hey, if you're going there, try the new burgers. Well, he did. He said it was pretty good.
They were good.
He gave good reviews on the burgers.
There you go,
at IHOP. I don't know if they paint a little smiley face on top of it for you or what. But
the ketchup smiley face.
That just surprises the heck out of me. I don't know why, but it just surprises the heck out of me that they would, not saying anything, I love IHOP.
They already had burgers. This isn't a surprise, is it? Isn't it? They served things other than lunch. I mean, other than breakfast.
I don't know. I've only ever gone there for breakfast.
Me too.
Maybe they're trying to branch out.
I guess it'd just be surprising to hear someone be like, I went to IHOP for dinner tonight.
Every once in a while, you got to shake things up, right? I mean, that maybe that's kind of, they've read the Donald Trump's book on the art of the deal, and they decided they were going to shake things up a little bit. It worked for them.
Yeah.
Everybody was talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then my kid ended up going there to eat yesterday.
Makes
so I
money.
Did end up spending some money there regardless.
One way or another.
Whether I got to enjoy it or not is a whole nother issue. All right. Hey, let's get to a quick break here. 314-241-9797. I got lawyer Tom on the phone and Ken wanting to talk about California and Kim Gardner and this whole issue of her just randomly ignoring you if you have, I don't know, what, a quarter pound of pot that you're driving around with. Because, of course, everybody needs that to be driving around with, apparently. She's decreasing or eliminating or dropping charges from anybody charged. So there are drug dealers all over the greater St. Louis city area who are celebrating this morning. I'm just telling you.
Well, what about the girls that you molested on C-SPAN at the Senate swearing in? No. He did it. No. Let him answer.
The left is not like Joe Biden to be called out. For the many times that he's been inappropriate with women, because Joe Biden is probably the leading presidential candidate for the Democrats in 2020.
No way.
Oh, I'm guessing. A lot of people are pushing him to run.
Yes.
Crazy Uncle Joe.
My goodness gracious.
Here's the thing about it, right? He's coming to St. Louis tomorrow.
Yeah.
Now here's my question, honestly. And I know I'm never, as often as I try, I'm never going to understand why anybody would want to go see Joe Biden speak. You listen to him for 8 years as vice president. Whatever he's got to say, you've heard before, right? And the thing about it is it's not for free. It's not.
You don't screw around with me.
I know that. I understand that. But it's what he's doing is not for free. You can go on. He's going to be at the Peabody Opera House tomorrow. And I'm not worried about giving him promotion for it. But I'm looking online at available. There are a lot of seats still available if you want to go. The cheapest ticket to go see him is $42.
What?
A person to go hear Joe Biden promote his own book. No, seriously. Like most people.
Which you'll also have to buy.
Yeah.
Right. Well, like most people would go to, a Borders or something and try to, and hope people showed up mm-hmm. so they'd sign their book and hand you a copy of it. He's charging you $42 to get inside and listen to his wisdom.
So, Jill, if there's ever a problem, just walk out on the balcony here or walk out. Put that double-barrel shotgun and fire two blasts outside the House.
See, you too could go get that, right?
It got me a scholarship to college. It's a law school, and I ended up close to the bottom of my class. So,
crazy Uncle Joe. Please go pay for. Please go waste your money and pay $42. You can get a VIP package for $322. Then you might walk away with a picture with Crazy Uncle Joe.
Do you get
if you're a,
book? A
woman, make sure that there, you have somebody with you so that if he tries to grope you, you have some evidence of it.
Man.
They just don't deal with things like groping the way they used to. That's just not, it's not, it's just a different time in America.
Maybe she tour with Bill, don't you think? Hey, Lawyer Tom, thanks for calling into the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, good morning. Hey, I was just thinking about that announcement that Kim Gardner made today about dismissing felony possession of marijuana cases, because anything over 35 grams is a felony. She could have announced that she wasn't going to be seeking any jail time for convictions for possession of that those levels of marijuana, which would have created solutions in a number of areas. Number one, those defendants would not be eligible for the public defender, because the public defender, the Sixth Amendment right to counsel, doesn't apply if there's no jail time. Plus, she could have been collecting fines, which would have helped revenue for the city. That would have also kept people out of the jails. And she would have been fulfilling her obligation as the circuit attorney to prosecute crime. So, I mean, I think she blew an opportunity here with a very, you know, not really thought out solution.
Yeah, that's a good, yeah, Tom, I didn't think about that. She could have certainly increased revenue, but that's not her goal. Her goal is criminal justice reform, which is allowing criminals to get away with crime. That's her goal. Fewer people in jail is her goal.
You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show.
I believe you'll see some good action. I mean, as an example, one of the things with the missile site, I think you're probably surprised to hear that. That was a throw-in at the end, the missile site. But I really believe, David, that it's going to go very quickly. I really believe that it's going to go fast.
How about that? President Trump there talking a little bit about with the denuclearization, the deal with North Korea and how all that stuff's going. You know, the thing about it is that the left in this country might be begrudgingly starting to acknowledge that there could possibly be an approach other than theirs when it comes to international relations. Now, I don't expect that you're ever going to hear Chuck Schumer or Nancy Pelosi admit that. And I don't think it's anything that's going to happen quickly, because we don't know for sure what's going to go on with Kim Jong-un heading forward. But just listen for a moment to cut number 28, because somewhere there is an icicle forming in hell. Listen.
So just looking through the prism, what impact will this have on American voters? What's the outcome? They're going to look at the front page of the paper today, and they're going to say, good on him. This is a hell of a lot better.
I agree.
Than a nuclear, a hell of a lot better than a nuclear war. And who knows, maybe shaking things up. Maybe saying no to the experts, maybe raising hell on the world stage, maybe calling him Little Rocket Man, maybe threatening him, got these two together.
Joe Scarborough.
That had to hurt a little bit.
That had to hurt a little bit. I mean, he had to get a couple little digs in, maybe calling Rocket Man, maybe it worked, maybe that's what got these two together.
But you know what? Even if it hurt a little bit for him to say it, it got what needed to be done, done. Go President
Trump.
Well,
you know, it did. I just, like I said, nobody knows for sure that this thing's over or we've seen the end of it, because although what happened was historic and unique, this guy and his family have a history of doing things like this to get people to back off them a little bit and then acting crazy again. Mm-hmm. We don't know for sure that it'll work. But at least we're not lobbing bombs at them, right?
What the hell do you have to lose?
I mean, see, he's been making that point for a while now, and the left didn't understand what he was talking about. Mm-mm. Because they thought that Barack Obama was the, you know, the World Peace Tour was the only solution. Mm-hmm. The World Apology Tour that he went on. Hey, glad that you're with us. Lots to go this hour. We've got Brett Scher coming up. He's an investigative reporter who's been covering campaigns for the Washington Free Beacon, and he's the one that did the story on Claire McCaskill. They're calling it Air Claire. They're calling her Air Claire because she promoted, of course, in her Senate race that she is touring the state in this RV that they painted with her campaign stuff on the side of it, which is kind of funny, right? Because she's a regular person just like you and I, and she might go crawl in a Class A motorhome and tour the state of Missouri.
Yeah, sure
she would. Except that Brett Scher, went and tracked her $1 million aircraft, and oddly enough, it followed the same path as the bus.
Who would have thought?
And Claire got a little bit of splaining to do. So we'll talk to him coming up later this hour. Stick around for that. 314-241-9797. You can always listen to our interviews at 971talk.com/Cox. All right. Time to move forward here. I talk to you about this immigration issue all the time. There are a bunch of lily-livered Republicans down there in Washington who are folding on amnesty, and they want to help with what's called a discharge petition. It only takes 24, 25 of them to do this, combined with the Democrats in Congress, and they can force a vote on amnesty. And then, lo and behold, House Speaker Ryan announced that he is going to allow a couple of votes on immigration coming up next week. Let's get to Dave Ray. He is with the Federation for American Immigration Reform with an update on this discharge petition. Dave, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mark. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. Last time I talked to you, you were on the southern border.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, always a happening spot down there. You can be sure of that.
Yeah, no kidding. What is Paul Ryan up to here? Is he trying to circumvent this group that wants to force an amnesty vote?
Yes.
Okay.
So what happened last night, and we still don't have the nitty-gritty details, but I can kind of give you the parameters of what we think went down, is that they came, they being the Democratic majority and their Republican allies, kind of this small group of Republicans that was going to sign on to the discharge petition and then force their entire party to walk the plank on immigration right before a midterm election.
Yeah.
Which, you know, just screams disaster, of course, because it was just going to be one big amnesty fest. But it looks like they came about two signatures short of getting the discharge petition. So Paul Ryan, you know, according to news reports and what we're hearing from our people on the Hill, is that moderate Republicans and conservative Republicans have agreed on two different bills to bring to the floor. Ryan has said he will bring them to the floor next week. They will have some sort of DACA component, whether that's going to be a, you know, permanent legalization or kind of a, you know, green card every 2 years or what have you, you know, all the details. The devil certainly are in the details. We're a little leery about this because we're afraid that it's going to be, you know, heavy on DACA and light on enforcement, when in fact President Trump promised the exact opposite, heavy on enforcement and nothing to do with an amnesty. But I think in the next couple of days we'll see the details of that and exactly what that's going to be. Now, with all this said, and this has been, you know, a lot of political horse trading here in Washington, it doesn't look like anything really has much of a chance in the Senate. You know, they need 60 votes. The Democrats are not moving on immigration. They don't want anything to do with enforcement. The Senate's already taken 4 votes on immigration. Really, none of them passed. And President Trump's not going to sign something that doesn't have money for the wall and other parts of his enforcement portfolio, like E-Verify, crackdown on sanctuary cities. And we all know how Democrats are feeling about sanctuary cities these days, right?
I don't
know that we made any ground yesterday, but we certainly aren't looking at this disastrous amnesty fest discharge petition, at least not right now. It's on the shelf, but that does not mean it's dead. You know, in Washington terms, if it's on the shelf, it can always be grabbed and brought out again.
So, oh, yeah. Well,
who
I mean,
knows? Might be another update next week.
No chance in the Senate, really, probably because of the Democrats, which is kind of weird. But you've always got the Trump card, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Democrats right now in the Senate, they won't talk about anything except amnesty. So it's 100% amnesty, 0% enforcement. What's interesting about that politically, real quick, is that, you know, Obama campaigned for 8 years on amnesty for Democrats, or on amnesty for illegal aliens. And actually, in the first 2 years of his election, he had a supermajority in the Senate. He had 60 Democratic senators, and he had a majority in the House. At that point, if Democrats were so supportive of an amnesty, they could have run one through without anybody stopping them in about 10 minutes and had it signed into law, and this whole thing would be behind us. They didn't even bring it up. So when they had all the cards, they had all the political power, they controlled all of Congress and the executive branch, they didn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. So you have to ask yourself, is this more of just a political ploy for them to parade out right before midterms to try to energize their base, or do they really want to get something done on this? I mean, it is they are toying with people's lives, and so that's kind of the sad aspect.
Yeah, I don't see any question that that's what it is. It can't be anything else. They wanted to fix for DACA. President Trump offered them not only the fix they wanted, but pretty much doubled the amount of people that would be covered by it. The Democrats ran the other direction.
Right, exactly. And, you know, they know that they can't get something for nothing, and that any talk of DACA is going to have such an enormous downside of an influx at the border that you have to put the enforcement aspects in place if you're even going to really have this conversation, because there will be immediate pressure on the border. And so, you know, the whole amnesty never, ever solves illegal immigration. It just incites more and encourages more people to try the same thing. So we have a ways to go on this. And, you know, but the president going into the midterms, you know, could be a good time for Republicans, and they might be emboldened after the midterm elections to come back to immigration if their hand is strengthened in the House of Representatives.
Yeah, let's hope so. We're talking to David Ray from the Federation for American Immigration Reform, fair.org. Is the website
fairus.org?
Fairus.org. Sorry, my screen's just far enough away that they typed the U.S. really small and I missed it.
Yeah.
Fairus.org. And so, a quick question on the sanctuary city issue. I read the other day that it may have been on the East Coast somewhere. Another judge ruled that the DOJ didn't have the right to restrict Homeland Security funds from a sanctuary city. Where do they keep finding these judges, David? I don't understand.
I don't know.
It's a grant.
This was astonishing. I actually did a blog post on this yesterday. So a judge ruled that the federal government did not have the right to target funds, Department of Justice funds for the city of Philadelphia. And the mayor of Philadelphia comes out of the room, and cameras were rolling, and he breaks into a dance and starts doing this Irish jig, singing, "We are a sanctuary city, we are a sanctuary city," and celebrating. And, you know, sanctuary cities are hotbeds of criminal activity. They draw, they're not only beacons for illegal immigration, but there are actually people in the city of Philadelphia who have lost their lives to dangerous MS-13 gang members who are, who live in Philadelphia. It cost the state of Pennsylvania tons of money to support illegal immigration, and he's out there doing the victory dance. You know, whose victory really was it? I mean, I guess it's a political victory for him, but it's certainly not a victory for the safety of his constituents. And it was just absolutely appalling.
Yeah, in my opinion, the politicians that are doing this are putting all of their eggs in the basket that eventually they will control Congress and the White House again, and they're going to grant amnesty. And at that point, all of these people that they claim to be protecting are going to turn into voters. Or maybe it's in California, they're already voting. I don't know.
There is a sense among Democrats. I mean, obviously, when the majority of people coming in this way are, you know, over the southern border are poor, and the Democrats are the people who are offering all the programs, that these will one day become loyal Democrats, and that what they're actually doing is importing their majority, since they've lost the American side of the equation. And a lot of Democrats do look at mass immigration and at throwing roadblocks at any kind of immigration control as a way of bolstering the Democratic ranks. And that might be exactly what we're looking at. Unfortunately, there's some carnage. You know, there's the Kate Steinleys of the world who were gunned down by people who had been released because of sanctuary policies. There are people in the city of Philadelphia who've died because of dangerous MS-13 people on the streets, who, if they were arrested, would be let right back out onto the streets of Philadelphia. You know, there are real victims to this, and nobody should be doing a happy dance about it.
It's just maddening. We know there are politicians right here in the city of St. Louis, which, as I said earlier, is a bit of a liberal vacuum in and of itself, who would love to provide sanctuary status, but fortunately our state lawmakers stepped in and they prevented something like that. So you just have to hope.
States do have the ability in a lot of instances to step in and kind of, you know, crack down on these sanctuary jurisdictions themselves, although, you know, there are federal laws on the books. And why this judge ruled the way he did, when it's crystal clear that the Department of Justice does have the authority in the Immigration Nationality Act to withhold Department of Justice funds to sanctuary cities, I don't think the story's finished yet.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think eventually it gets to the Supreme Court. So maybe that's a decision for next June with a court that includes whoever replaces Justice Kennedy.
Right. Yeah.
which we're speculating on at this point. Listen, Dave Ray, I'm out of time. I appreciate your time. FairUS.org, at Fair Immigration. And we're looking forward to seeing you in the fall when we travel to D.C. for your Radio Row.
Oh, absolutely. Looking forward to seeing you face-to-face, my friend, and you have a great day.
All right. Thank you very much. Dave Ray there. We're going to go there in early September. The fair is going to sponsor this the Radio Row. I did it last year. I believe maybe the morning show has traveled there before in the past. But
yeah, it's been a long time ago. But
they gather experts from around the country who believe in common sense immigration reform. You know what that is. That's not comprehensive immigration reform. That's common sense immigration reform that talks about strengthening borders and lowering the number of people we're allowing in, doing a better job of vetting the ones that are coming here in terms of why do you want to come? What skill set are you bringing with you? Just common sense things, visa controls, where they can help track who's here and how long they've been here. That's a simple Windows program, for goodness sake. There's so many things they need to do, but with border security being at the very top of that, and amnesty not having anything to do with it. So Ted Cruz usually shows up at those things. Louis Gohmert is there. I think we talked to Michelle Malkin last year when we were there. Sebastian Gorka was there. There's a good chance there'll be representatives there from this White House because these are policy reforms they support. So we're looking forward to that. We're going to head out there and into the swamp where put our hip waders on and go into the swamp in early September. Should be a good time. Should be a good time.
It will be.
You know, we played that bite off the top there with Morning Joe. And I suggested that it's going to be a slow climb for some of these lefties who've been curled up in a corner with a coloring book to turn around and admit that Trump has ever done anything close to right. So for some of them, it's never going to happen. Go to cut number 8.
If I ran for president, I would win. Hands down, I would win.
Because you would
be
not
the funniest, most exciting, when are you most gonna, crazy if campaign.
You're the, if you're the hope of the Democratic
people
Party.
Don't, I'm not, but people don't. I'm only saying that because people don't really have a sense of who's going to come up. I mean, somebody great's going to come up, I hope. But the only reason I say that is because I'd love to run for that kind of position.
Would you
just
say,
have things be very common sense?
So you would never...
Chicken crap.
Yeah, Alec Baldwin thinks he's going to run and beat Donald Trump. Would beat him hands down if he ran.
Alec Baldwin has such a big head about himself. Oh, my gosh.
You think?
I have a good relationship with Justin Trudeau. I really did. Other than he had a news conference that he had because he assumed I was in an airplane and I wasn't watching. He learned that's going to cost a lot of money for the people of Canada. He learned. You can't do that. You can't do that.
Yeah, Donald Trump saying, hey, you can't sneak one over on me just because I'm traveling 25 straight hours and not getting any sleep. You think I wasn't going to find out about that, Justin? You know, the thing I find fascinating about that is that it's being played off that he's being nasty to our friends and friendly to our
allies.
Enemies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if he was friendly with Trudeau and lobbing bombs at North Korea, they would ignore Trudeau and they would criticize him for going to war with Korea. I mean, it's just he can't win that argument. But anyway, everything's going to be okay, ladies and gentlemen. Canada is going to reduce its tariffs. Everything's going to be good with the world again. Just slow down. Take it easy. The adults are now in charge. Hey, let me get to my guest. He is Brent Scher. He is with the Free Beacon, freebeacon.com. And he caught my attention because he's put together this story on Senator Claire McCaskill, which I thought was just a brilliant piece of reporting on your part. Brent, how are you?
I am good, and thank you. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. You know, I was a reporter for many years, worked in a local television, worked here in the St. Louis market, and I can remember going to websites where you could track the flights of airplanes. You know, we would normally do that in the event that there was a crash and we had a tail number or something like that. But tell folks what you did here, because Claire McCaskill went on a tour of Missouri in an RV and released pictures about it and talked about getting out among the people. What made you go to want to find out where her million-dollar private plane was?
So a bit of background before the current story is that Claire McCaskill, of course, has long had, you know, faced a lot of political trouble over her ownership of a private plane back last election cycle. In 2012, it became such an issue because she was using taxpayer money to fly the plane that she got her husband to sell it just to buy a new one after she won re-election. So last year, as she's gearing up to run this current re-election campaign, she actually asked the FAA, you know, which runs all the flights in the country and regulates them, to make tracking of her plane, the data of it, unavailable to the public. So when you go on websites, like common websites like FlightAware.com, her plane comes up as this plane cannot be tracked. But there happened to, and this was news to me when I found it, be websites that use different data that a plane gives off, GPS data that is automatically transmitted from a plane. And it's just aviation hobbyists in Missouri who are taking the data that comes from her plane and uploading it to the internet and mapping the entire thing. So you could go to any day on this website, adsbexchange.com, and see exactly where and when Claire McCaskill's plane is traveling.
Yeah, so people can go to the Free Beacon and see your article today, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So I just want to point that out again. But so you went there and you mentioned the background of Claire and airplanes. I can remember covering her when she first ran for Senate. There was a controversy over the fact that her husband had this aircraft, but he had it registered somewhere up on the East Coast in a state that basically allowed people it was basically a tax shelter for these very expensive aircraft. That's what originally caught a reporter's attention years ago in regards to her family's use of aircraft. You know, if you can afford a private aircraft, I have no trouble. I have no problem at all with people using private aircraft. More power to you if you've been that successful in life. The question is, Claire constantly struggles with her image. She wants to portray herself as a good old Missouri girl with Missouri values. And, you know, in the show me state, people want to make sure that you're honest about your stuff. And here she's promoting driving around the state in a big blue motorhome that says Claire McCaskill on the side of it. When you tracked her plane, what did you find out?
Well, we found out that her RV tour mysteriously was taking the same route as her private plane was taking each day. On the first day, I believe it was about 2 weeks ago on May 29th, her plane, her tour started in Waynesville, then went to Springfield, and then to Joplin. And if you look at her plane, it goes from Waynesville to Springfield to Joplin. And then the next morning, Claire's first stop was up in Kansas City. Right after her plane goes from is done in Joplin, it heads up north to Kansas City, where McCaskill was the next morning. And then the next day, her first stop was further up north, up in St. Joseph from Kansas City, which is, of course, where her private plane goes first from Kansas City. So it appeared that whether it was Claire or... it was impossible to tell because the McCaskill campaign did not respond to any of my emails asking them about what role the plane was playing on its RV trip. And it was just clear that the plane was part of the trip. But then yesterday, McCaskill actually confirmed that she did ride the plane during the RV trip, which just comes off as not genuine.
No, it's not. I mean, it's the optics of it, right? I would much prefer to hop on an airplane and fly to Florida than ride in any sort of vehicle for 16 or 17 hours. And even if it's a small, shorter trip than that, it would be much preferable to ride in a comfortable million-dollar jet aircraft. It's not a jet. It's a single-engine turboprop. But it would be much more comfortable to do that. Just be honest about it. But had you not reported this, this would have turned into a campaign ad for Claire McCaskill showing her getting on and off this bus, and people would be left with the impression that she traveled the state in an RV to meet people when in reality she was flying above their heads, treating them like flyover country.
I tend to agree with you. I believe the politically expedient move probably is just to, you know, own travel on your private plane.
It's
like Trump owns travel on his plane
or at his resorts.
That was not the route her campaign was going. Her campaign even went as far as sending out fundraising emails complaining that gassing up an RV is expensive and asking for voters in Missouri or wherever she's receiving money across the country to chip in to, you know, buy half a tank in the RV, not mentioning that the cost of gas was such a not concern to the McCaskill campaign.
Yeah, wait till you buy av gas.
A plane along with the RV.
It's true. Listen, Brent Scher, I appreciate your time and good job reporting on this. You can be followed at Brent Scher. That's S-C-H-E-R on Twitter. And of course, it's freebeacon.com. And we can put up a link to that story, which you probably already have on our website, 971talk.com/Cox. And we'll put it up on the Facebook page as well. Brent, thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, keep me on.
Keep up the good work. And I had no idea you could track aircraft like that. Clearly, she tried to avoid it being tracked, but there are ways around that.
And he said amateur aviation hobbyist, didn't he say?
They brought it to people's attention.
That's funny.
That you can go to that website and track that data. Good stuff. Sorry, Claire. I think, Claire, that most people would feel like this.
It really is time for the people of America to take up pitchforks.
Let me get to my guest here real quick. He is County Councilman Mark Harder from District Number 7. Mark, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mark.
I this caught my attention today. The Ethics Committee for the County Council has released a pretty scathing report on the county executive.
Yes, we had a meeting yesterday and went over last comments and edits to a draft report of the investigation of the committee, which started back around January of this year.
Right.
And we're going to be releasing that here after the county council fully approves it. It'll probably get released at the end of next week.
So briefly, because I don't have as much time as I'd like here, but it concerns the lease agreements for the Northwest Plaza redevelopment area, right?
Correct. And it's how that came about. And it's basically just a information piece to let the population know what we did and what we found out. And we've got about five banker boxes full of documents and things that were turned over to us in our inquiries. And so we just want to make sure that the residents of St. Louis County understand what went on at this property.
Right. So I know Steve Stinger has claimed that this is all some effort to affect the outcome of the current primary election that he's involved in with Mark Montavani. But among these allegations really are that he hid $2.4 million payment by sort of moving around some money from different funds. And that's part of the allegation, correct?
That's part of it, and there's others. There's about 14 recommendations or pieces of information that we found out that are very unusual or red flags about this property back in 2016 when this was negotiated, and things that are out of the ordinary, like having an outside person come in and negotiate this instead of the Public Works Department negotiate this deal. So
wow.
there's a lot of red flags, and that's what brought about the ethics committee to even have an ethics committee, and then to do the investigation and to hear testimony. And we're going to put this report out, like I said, next week. It will be on the county website, so everybody else can read it and draw your own conclusion.
Well, and among the recommendations is referring it to the U.S. attorney.
I think that's something that's the next step, and the committee voted to take it to that next step, and we'll see if there's anything there, as they say.
Yeah, yeah. You sound like Bill Clinton when you say that. You know that, right?
Yeah, I do.
Very nice. He's been practicing.
Oh, yeah. I didn't.
Listen, Mark Carter, I appreciate you giving me a little bit of time. I'm sorry we didn't have more time to talk about this, but again, this is going to be publicly rolled out next Tuesday at the meeting?
Well, we'll vote on it next Tuesday at the meeting, and then hopefully we can get the report. It will probably be closer to 100 pages because we have some testimony from the county executive that will be included in the report, and we'll try to get that up on the county website for everyone to see by probably the end of next week.
Very good. Mark Carter, always a pleasure. Thanks for your time.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Yep, have a good morning. Appreciate that. He's got work on that Bill Clinton.
He needs to listen to you. Down.
Close, but no Yasser Arafat cigar.
You're listening to the Mark Cox Morning Show.
Please. Here's the bottom line.
We need to get to the bottom of this.
The bottom line on the Mark Cox Show.
That's the only way we're going to get to the bottom of this.
That's the bottom line.
You can't handle the truth.
All right. Glad to welcome in Missouri State Representative Michael Butler from District 79, but he's also a candidate right now for Recorder of Deeds here in the city of St. Louis,
sir.
Right?
Glad to be here.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good
Thank
to have you.
You
in.
Good to talk to issues on this morning.
Absolutely. So my understanding is that you just got off Claire McCaskill's private plane and came over here, right? Is that how that went down this morning?
I don't know where we would have parked it in the city of St. Louis.
I'm just kidding. We had a little fun with her earlier because there's a Washington Free Beacon report today that she went on her RV tour around the state, and they found out that her private plane followed her to each stop because she wasn't riding on the RV. She was getting in the plane and flying to the next city and waiting for the RV to get there. It's pretty funny.
Well, as long as she went all across the state, you know, She did. She's done over 50 town halls across state and been in a lot of rural areas, and we got her to come to urban Missouri as well. And I think she's doing that a good listening tour and listening to the issues.
When she first started this campaign, her reelection campaign, she took a lot of heat, didn't she, from the African American community for not listening more or taking a more active role?
That heat is still on. I think we all know that the African American community, the returns from the African American community, really helped to create another term for Senator Claire McCaskill, and we expect a lot more from our U.S. senators from this state when we speak that loudly. And I mean, same thing happened in Alabama with Doug Jones with that special election. And African-American communities across the country are expecting a lot from their national officials.
Well, they are. And as I've talked to Chris Arps about, who runs his own organization, MoveOnUp.org, for African-Americans who are conservative, he points out that the Democratic Party's long had a problem with that, that they sometimes, the national leaders at least, tend to ignore their African-American, kind of take for granted that they're going to get that support.
You know, as a Democrat, I'm not going to deny part of that, but we can clearly say that the Republican Party does a lot worse and absolutely ignores the African-American community. What we saw in the 2016 elections is that Republicans cared. Talking points didn't even have anything to do with any of the issues that face African-Americans.
Michael, I have a question for you.
Sure. What the hell do you have to lose?
Record low unemployment.
I thought we were gonna have one conversation without bringing up the president.
Record low unemployment for African Americans, for women. I mean, the economy's going in the right direction.
I would love to thank our African American president who started that great economic trend. You know, when Barack Obama first became president, we had record highs, and we had record highs for unemployment for everybody. And in 8 years, he turned that around. So I think we tend to forget exactly what state we were in 2008 and 2009.
And record high unemployment among African-American males throughout the Obama administration. That was a number he was never able to bring down.
He didn't create that. That was clearly an economic downturn that happened during the Bush administration.
Yeah. I've heard that somewhere before. Where have I heard that before?
You didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
I have to give you a little bit of grief over that. So you're running to be a public office holder in the city of St. Louis, where you if you got elected to that job, you would be one of the citywide elected officials, along with Kim Gardner, who has announced that she's not going to prosecute felony possession cases of marijuana for less than like a 100 grams, which is roughly a quarter of a pound.
Yeah, if I'm elected recorded deeds, I'd be the first millennial elected to citywide office in the city of St. Louis. And I can tell you, millennials agree with that issue. Our city budget should agree with that issue, agree with Kim Gardner's stance. She's right. We could, if we don't handle these nonviolent crimes that have been decriminalized in some cases, it's a push to decriminalization from the last mayor's administration and across the country, then we can focus on our homicide rate, which gets commented about quite a bit all across the country.
Yeah, and like you said, she campaigned on this issue.
Yes.
But there's a difference between saying you want criminal justice reform and simply ignoring the law. Right now, having more than 30 grams of marijuana is a felony, and she's just choosing to ignore that instead of having the law regarding that being a felony changed. So you see what I'm saying? I mean, for a lot of people, it's a law and order issue. You can't just ignore laws that you don't like, and that seems to be what Kim Gardner's doing here.
I don't think she's ignoring the law. I think she's clearly following the law that so you're talking about a federal law or a part of some state laws that the push is easy in the state legislature as well, which she just came from, as well as in the city with ordinance to decriminalize those.
Well, I know they want to decriminalize it. My point is that they haven't decriminalized it to that point yet. And even though 5 years from now we may have a very different conversation on this, as the day stands right now, what she's choosing to do is ignore current felonies to go after what she considers to be more serious felonies. Correct?
You know, if Kim Gardner was someone else, I think they'd call that smart on government.
And I don't know about that, though.
And I think she's being smart on crime. I'd have to agree with
Jeff Rorta said with the Police Officers Association. There's a word for somebody that carries around 100 grams of pot with them, and that's a drug dealer, because the average person doesn't need to have a quarter pound of marijuana sitting in their back seat.
I wouldn't know how many grams it takes to...
I had to look it up on the internet. The girls can vouch for me this morning.
Yes, we're all doing some research.
We were trying to do some. How much is that? And one website said that it comes out to like 400 joints or something like that, 100 grams of marijuana, which is a significant amount of pot.
The bottom line is that when people talk about St. Louis, they don't talk about possession of marijuana. They talk about murder rates. They talk about property crime, and they talk about, you know, break-ins, and we've got to make sure that we reduce homicide rates, we reduce break-ins, we reduce property crimes, and when we begin to do that, we'll begin to see people moving back to the city, and we'll make this city more attractive.
So we can agree then that when you've got a prosecutor who's persecuting a governor in a case that has no evidence. To begin with, instead of prosecuting all the murders that are backed up that she should be prosecuting, she's not heading in the right direction, right? Can we agree on that?
I would like to say that I'm just glad that the circuit attorney can finally begin to work on not be distracted by the governor's actions. I think we can agree
because
on that.
She was forced to drop her case.
I think we definitely can agree that we're glad the circuit attorney no longer has to deal with the governor.
All right, Michael Butler, listen, as state representative, when is your primary election?
August 7th. It'll be coming up here in a couple months.
Well, good luck to you. We'll have you back in here soon.
Thank you.
The Trump doctrine is we're America, bitch.
I'm sorry.
Still not old. I still
something
like it.
That Shep Smith and Chuck Schumer clearly don't understand. Or just don't want to understand. Isn't that kind of what it gets down to? Don't you get that impression? Chuck Schumer wasn't going to be happy with no matter what came out of that.
No way.
And if we weren't talking, he wouldn't be happy. And if we were bombing, he wouldn't be happy. And we are talking, and he's not happy. And we're going to get to all of that. I'm also going to get to some of your phone calls because there are folks who want to talk about the marijuana deal here in the city. The prosecutor is wanting to give to drug dealers to sort of legitimize their biz a little bit, right? It's okay. Carry around a quarter pound of it. We're just going to ignore that. Just ignore that. You know what Hillary Clinton would say? How much pot are you carrying around with you?
Yeah, just ignore that.
I'm just saying.
There's nothing to see here.
What you need a weed?
What's a quarter pound of weed
in your back pocket? You know, everybody needs that. 314-241-9797-866-455-9797. Coming up, Bob Poduchik. He's with the GOP. We're going to talk to him more about the reaction around the country from Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and some of these other on the left to the president's summit success in Singapore.
I've been to the bottom of bottom, and right now I'm on the highest of high. We are the party of President Donald J. Trump.
Yeah, remember that name, Katie Arrington. You're going to hear a lot more about it. She just primaried Mark Sanford down in South Carolina. How about that? Hey, let me invite my guest in right now. He is Bob Poduchik. He's the GOP co-chair. You can follow him at GOP and at Paduch, P-A-D-U-C-H on Twitter. Bob, welcome in.
Mark, thanks for having me on this morning.
Yeah, good to have you on. You've got to be paying close attention to these primaries that wrapped up yesterday around the country.
Yeah, I think a lot of people that support the president and his policies did well yesterday, and that's no real surprise. We saw similar things in Ohio's primary, where I live, several weeks ago. And what's to argue with that? I mean, you look at this economy, you look at the record unemployment that we have, the wage growth, more than 3 million jobs created, and the historic tax cuts, the regulatory reform. It makes a lot of sense, not just for Republicans but Democrats to get behind what this president's doing, because the results are fantastic.
Yeah, you know that's going to be a trick, though, is ever getting them to admit it. I mean, you've got a lot of people. I'm just thinking, you mentioned Ohio. I grew up in southern Ohio, just north of Cincinnati. You've got the governor of Ohio, Governor Kasich, who still goes around on a regular basis and badmouths this president. So even you've got, we got to get some of these people on board.
Well, you know, I'm not sure that John Kasich ever gets on board. He's on his way out. He's done at the end of the year, and we'll have a new governor. It'll be Mike DeWine, the Republican attorney general that won the primary last month. He's going to do a great job, and we got Jim Renacci, who's running against Sherrod Brown for the Senate, and that's where we need a lot of help in the United States Senate, because most people think that 51 votes in the Senate is a majority, but it's really not. Because of the Senate rules, you need 60 votes and to get things done, and that's why we don't have budgets that get passed, because the Democrats in the Senate don't want to play ball, and they filibuster everything, and it creates sort of the tyranny of the minority, which is why we need to do something about Claire McCaskill, and I think a lot of Missourians are ready for a change there.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. You know, we had a story on her earlier. A reporter found out that her private million-dollar plane followed her around on her RV bus tour around Missouri, which I'm not sure the public would have known about had the reporter not stumbled across the story. You know, we know Claire's history in Missouri. She's a slick politician. She moderates and moves to the center during election time. Then she goes back to D.C., and she votes with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi the rest of the time.
Well, moderate Claire McCaskill is about as fake as that bus trip she had.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest here. And she's had lots of airplane problems over the years. I know that. And I think this is one of the best chances we have to beat her. Now, I know we got a primary that'll sort things out on August 7th, and the Republican National Committee doesn't get involved in these primaries or anything. But boy, she's a great target and opportunity for a pickup for us, because obviously President Trump won the state of Missouri, and she right now she's underwater. There's a poll that came out that said that 52% of Missourians want a new person in the United States Senate representing them. And the problem for Claire McCaskill is that when it comes to make the hard votes, when it comes time to vote for repeal and replace Obamacare, when it comes time to vote for historic tax cuts that have really boosted this economy and put more money in the pockets of working men and women in Missouri and Ohio and across this country, she votes with the Democrats from New York and in Massachusetts. You know, if she wants to be senator for Massachusetts and vote like Elizabeth Warren all the time, she should move there.
Yeah, that's a great point. Bob Paduchik is my guest. He's the co-chairman of the Republican National Committee right now. Let me ask you for a moment about Katie Arrington, who won last night. There was a belief that a lot of people were going to maybe not discourage, but run away from endorsements from President Trump 6 months ago. And now we're finding out that, as Katie Arrington proved, that's not a good idea. I mean, more and more Americans are starting to realize that this president has this country on the right track. What does that mean, in your opinion, for the November midterms?
Well, I think that means a lot of good opportunities for us in November. I mean, these midterm elections are always tough for the party that has the White House, because there's a tendency for Americans to kind of want this divided government. But when in the times when that historical trend has been changed, 2002 and other years, and they don't happen very often. But when they do happen, it's because the economy is good and the president is relatively popular. And, you know, we see different numbers from different polling. And honestly, unless I'm running the poll myself, I'm suspicious of the results these days, because you got to know the methodology and the sampling and all that. But honestly, I think the president now, we'll look at North Korea. They saw a president that was tough on North Korea, tough on words, tough on actions with sanctions, sending the U.S. Navy over there, and then they also see a president that's willing to work for peace. You know, somebody that'll be tough, but will also sit down and talk with people and try to find a way that to make our country safer. All those things, you know, create that image that voters look at. And I think they got to be happy with the results.
Yeah, yeah, I would agree with that, and I think more and more of them are going to come to that realization. Bob Paducek, listen, it's a pleasure to talk to you, GOP co-chair at Paduch, at P-A-D-U-C-H on Twitter, and of course you can follow GOP.com online. Thanks so much for your time, Bob.
Thanks, Mark. Take care.
You bet. Always good to get someone who's right at the top, who's looking at all of this and what's going on across the country. Hey, our guest right now is Michael Proctor, ProctorDrapery.com. How are you, Michael?
I'm fine. Doing good.
You've got some experience in Hollywood, don't you? Didn't you tell me that the other day?
Yes, yes. I tried my acting skills out there, and I was, commercial actor and went to acting school.
That's cool. Did you ever meet Robert De Niro?
No.
No. But you did meet a couple of famous folks out there.
Oh, sure, yeah. Well, through my business, Jane Mansfield.
Oh,
Jane Marie Mansfield, Playmate of the Year.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's a good one.
There you go.
Oh, the best one. The best one. I did drapery work for Nixon's right-hand man. Who was that?
President Nixon's
Oh, chief
really?
Of staff.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll think of it in a minute. Mm,
I'm sorry. Google it for me.
I know. I'm trying.
Because we talked about this one day, but that's pretty cool, though. But you can't.
That was so cool.
You just can't be out there and not rub elbows with some of those folks, right? Yeah. In LA and
Hollywood.
Because
when I went into their home, they had this big tapestry of the Great Wall of China that they brought back. It looked like an oil painting or something. But it was a rug.
Is this the guy? Bob Haldeman?
Yeah, Bob Haldeman. I did work at Haldeman's house in Santa Barbara.
Ehrlich and Haldeman, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I remember that.
And
wow.
I was just really impressed with that.
So see, there you have it. You have before you Michael Proctor, who came to my house and brought his mobile design unit out there and was able to walk in. And yet he's also serviced people like Bob Haldeman and folks in Hollywood. I mean, you can have that expertise at your fingertips.
And some local celebrities around here, too, as well. Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
The hockey players.
Seen a lot of the hockey players stuff that you've done. Fantastic.
Yeah. I have a question for you, because when I walk into a room, it's a room. I can't immediately say to somebody, I know what would make this room a lot better. Now, you can do that. Did that come naturally to you, or was it just years of experience?
Just years of experience. If I had to start today, which a lot of people would, they're young and they would have to start. There's just so much to offer today that it would just overwhelm me. I would just be overwhelmed by the amount of knowledge you'd have to have about all the different fabrics, all the different shades, all the different blinds, different lifting systems, all the motorization. It would just blow me away. So
yeah, yeah.
I've got like a PhD now after 45 years. Well, I don't want to really say 45.
Yeah, you don't want to say how many years.
I'm not an old
really
guy.
Right?
I'm a young guy. Started when I was 3. So
Denise and I talk about this all the time, but I mean, you work 7 days a week.
Yes.
And you do that because not everybody can deal with everything in their life Monday through Friday, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And it's just, when I go to people's house on the weekend, I don't feel like I'm working because it's the weekend. Everybody's off.
Sure.
Saturday,
sure.
Sunday.
You got customers in a really good mood because it's the weekend and they're getting ready to make their home beautiful.
Right. And then if a customer wants me to come in the evening, I will. But then once I get there, they usually don't want me there. They don't know they don't want me. they're tired, too. So
sure.
I prefer to work 7 days a week.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you follow it all the way up, and you do a lot of the installation yourself.
I do all the installation, except for I have a great shutter team.
Mm-hmm.
And we work together on that. I have the best shutter team in America. I've done hundreds of shutter jobs and not one complaint.
And
just beautiful, absolutely beautiful work.
And for people who may be hearing this, we're not talking about the shutters on the outside of your house. We're talking about beautiful indoor shutters.
That
you showed us what the
two
or 3 or 4 inch shutters when you came out to our house.
4 inch to you.
It was four inch
louvers. Yes,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people like the 3 inch louvers. And then if you have a small window, you can go with the 2 inch louvers, 2.5. Well, so it's 2.5, 3.5, 4.5.
Well, I would encourage you, anybody considering it, to let Michael come out and take a look. Plus, he can enthrall you with some of his Hollywood stories when he's there. So,
oh, yeah.
It's good.
Yeah, it was absolutely a good time. I had a good time out there.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. Listen, Michael, we're about out of time, but thank you so much for coming over. I appreciate that.
Well, thanks for
ProctorDrapery.com. Proctor is spelled like doctor. It's the first thing my daughter said to me when I told her Michael Proctor was coming over. She goes, Proctor spelled like doctor? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah,
that's
people,
awesome.
People honk at me on the street and say, hey, Proctor spelled like doctor. They get it all the time.
I love it. Michael, thank you.
Get more at 971talk.com.